SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM Online and at our website, stevebeck.com. It is Whitney weekend. I toyed with going to the track, but the only person we would be sure to have live was Dave Grenig and maybe Mike Welch, but it just didn't make sense. So, like, I know Dave's got to go over to the Oklahoma later, mid-morning here, 9:45 after we're done talking to him for Turf Works. So, very much entrenched here at, Ice Station Zebra at the desk. Looking forward to the weekend. We'll do it all from here. We got a very busy 3 hours and a lot to cover. Obviously, it's going to focus more heavily on the Saratoga card than the good Del Mar action. But we'll get the Del Mar covered as well. And, of course, the Bing Crosby, which really hasn't gotten a lot of conversation. And I think it's just because of the Saratoga action, kind of overwhelming when it comes to the Whitney and when it comes to the personal ensign, and you got three grade ones, fold in the jerkins and some of the stars on parade, as it were. But the shared belief, absolutely important, comes early. Remember, I mean, early West Coast time for East Coasters, 5:30 post for the shared belief. So it'll come kind of in the wheelhouse as we're, watching the action in New York. We'll fold it all in. Jay Privman will cover the West Coast action. And in addition, of course, to the two stakes, the principal stakes at Del Mar, the Crosby and the shared belief, on Sunday, the Clement Hirsch. And, much like we've been talking, frankly, at Saratoga, with, kind of compact fields. It's a compact field, but boy, is it good. Kind of the same theme as we've discussed with the Whitney this week. The field that came together is going to feature CeCe, Michael McCarthy, who is really, placing horses, stake horses and everything else beautifully. And I think it's fair to say the year-long target for CeCe, the Clement Hirsch, as breeder owner Bo Hirsch looks to take the namesake trophy home for honoring his father. So CeCe, the elusive quality filly in the Clement Hirsch. Hard Not to Love is involved. John Sheriff's, West Point and Company. Ellen J. with Dog Tag Mandela. You've got Ollie's Candy in here for the Eggerts. And John Sadler, Fighting Mad, off the Santa Maria win when last seen in May. And also Hang a Star, who's trying to step up. Graded stake placed for Ian Kruljack, who's had a little bit of a struggle thus far at Old Del Mar. So the Clement Hirsch on Sunday. There's also one other stake. There's a good maiden race. What's the other stake? The generous portion? No, the graduation. There we go. Is the restricted company action. So Sunday at Del Mar, and I don't know. I haven't decided yet if I'm going to make the Clement Hirsch the featured Beat Bick race on Sunday. I can tell you that tomorrow the Beat Bick race is the Allen Jerkins. I wanted to make it really challenging and people could, hand for gold, as it were. But there's a lot of other good races. I'll get to that decision in a little bit as we get into the action. And I want to mention a couple of spots that we'll probably just touch on. I think Hammer, actually, when Hammer joins us in hour two, I got a feeling he can talk because he's getting ready to head to Kentucky Downs. At the end of August, then happy August, everybody. Tomorrow. The races at Ellis on Sunday, if you haven't noticed this yet from yesterday's draws, you've got those Kentucky Downs preview races again. This is the third year, and it's a tremendous card. Absolutely terrific. Turf Sprint Preview, Tourist Mile Preview, the Turf Cup Preview, the Ladies, and the Ladies Sprint. And big, bulky fields. This is a really engaging set of five races at Ellis. And there's also a very good maiden special that starts with the fifth. So I want you to be aware of Ellis on Sunday. And I was going to bring you Marty McGee. But Marty caught the draw, wrote the advance for the paper, and took off for a few days vacation. So Marty said, you're on your own. Good luck. But I think Hammer probably will talk about this because it'll feed into the work at Kentucky Downs right after Derby week. All right. Also, we're going to have a Woodbine visit. We really haven't had a chance to do much with Woodbine, but Ron Gierking is going to join us from the Daily Racing Form. He'll join us after Jay, and very important for players of the cross country pick five tomorrow. Woodbine's 9th and 10th are legs A and D, and they are deep and difficult. So I reached for Ron Gierking. We'll get Ron's help. We'll also get some thoughts from him. I never had a chance to connect with Roger Atfield. We'll get, I'm sure Ron is on top of the next steps for Cheryl's Spite, and we can catch up on a few things with Ron. So I'm looking forward to that. And there's also a couple of good stakes too at Woodbine. Not huge fields, but we'll get some thoughts from Ron too. You've got the Greenwood, which is a six-horse field that's got a very heavy Wesley Ward favorite involved, and there's the My Dear early in the card for the two-year-old fillies as that season gets started. And Steve Asmussen with Joy's Rocket up there at 6-5. So we'll talk to Ron. Looking forward to that. The Monmouth Oaks, and I'll probably just do that with Nick Tamaro as part of the cross-country pick five coverage. The 11th tomorrow, 5:31 post, and it is terrific. If you haven't had a chance yet, there's a lot of good racing tomorrow. And of course, the centerpiece being Saratoga, but Del Mar, just told you about Woodbine and its involvement, and then this Monmouth Oaks, which is going to go as the second leg. Here's the quick notation. Monmouth, 11th is the second leg. The first leg of the pick five, Woodbine 9th, Monmouth 11th, then the Whitney, Saratoga 9, Woodbine 10, and then the anchor leg, going to be tough. The anchor leg is the Alan Jerkins with the really nice sized field and with a lot of ways to go. So that'll be a big part of our conversation. A quick rundown. Dave Grenig has mentioned. Dave will kick us off in about 5-6 minutes after we do some quick recapping and setting the stage. Marcus Hirsch has to be here. If you did not see Marcus's reporting yesterday coming out of the CDI shareholders meeting presentation, announcing, obviously a difficult quarter of business. As part of it, Bill Carstegen, quoted extensively by Marcus as to what appears to be a dispensation of Arlington Park that is so distressing and disheartening that it's even knowing or anticipating that this was in the offing, it just is hitting the race going public that understands Arlington's place in the game's history, and essentially as one of the great race courses in the world. And as we said to Marcus, 3 weeks ago, when the agreement, what appeared and what had initially been reported as a 2-year agreement with Horsemen to have a season this year and next, with no promises beyond 21, well, clearly that agreement expired out of, out of code pretty quickly, because Carstegen yesterday hinting that if they so choose to have a season next year, we'll let Marcus, I with all the handicapping I wanted to do and discussions of the racing, this obviously was a story that wasn't going to wait until next week. So we'll spend some time with Marcus this hour. And he will get reaction and everything you need to know. Jay Pridman is mentioned. Ron Gierkink, Hammer. Hammer's back from his trip. And now he'll start to focus here the next few weeks before heading to Kentucky for the Kentucky down season. Nick Tamaro and Mike Welch. There you go. There's the lineup. Turn to yesterday, and yesterday at Saratoga, it was fun. Another, as we kind of anticipated, it was another fun day of racing, and there were a few surprises, and the toughest part continues to be. And, that's what makes Saratoga fun, is coming across races where, you can't seem to count on an anticipated pace scenario. And, when you least expect it, it seems, a horse gets away with an easy lead, or horses get hounded on the front end, and certainly on the main track right now, it feels like it's tough to close. And then all of a sudden you get to a race like the seventh where you had a closer at a price. And, it's funny. If somebody was going to say that Horacio De Paz was going to win one race out of a couple of starters yesterday, I think everybody would have said, Amundsen should probably win. Fed funds, this is why we say when you have a couple of starters, sometimes you don't necessarily want to win the first time, the first race. If you had a stake starter, as Barry Schwartz did, and Barry, part of Black Swan too, Fed funds comes running under Santana, who, as soon as the gates opened with Volatile, suddenly he's won seven races in short order. Ricardo Santana Jr., after a slow start at the meet, seemingly has shaken that off. And Fed funds came and ran down my man Flintstone, who had dispatched, pretty much anybody that was chasing, including, but he actually went, my man Flintstone ended up going favored at 6-5. And that was the first hint, I think, that he was going to run, you know, an A race. And he was, you know, to me, he was a B. Mr. Bobby was a horse that I think a lot of us were kind of leaning on. And, you know, he was chasing from outside. 21-4, 44-4. And then, you know, they started to stagger home, and here came Fed Funds. So he was the tough horse to come up with in the sequence. And there, you know, there were some tricky spots. There's no doubt. My Heart Belongs to Daddy ran a really good race for Larry Goichman with another winner, Jorge Abreu, and the Scat Daddy mare on the front end with Jose Lascano. And, you know, as always, when you get guys that are jocks that are known, you know, for off the pace, when they are on speed horses, they're terrific. Rosario on that front, Leperu on that front, Lascano when he gets his hands on a front runner, very good rating on the front end. And then My Heart Belongs to Daddy just powered away, you know, got away with modest and you know, rather mundane fractions, and wins away at a nice 7-2. And then there was the stake. You had the Morrissey, and Amundsen was awful. I mean awful. There's no punch pulling here. No good. Funny guy. What can you say about Funny Guy? Really a terrific story. And there was Randy Hill. Randy Hill. And Randy could come back today and win again. He's got another big chance today. Funny Guy, John Terranova, you know, the Vekoma team of Gatsis and Randy Hill, and more. They've got other partners. And Funny Guy, very, very strong in here. Really strong. And T Loves a Fight came, ran very well, basically utilized the inside, on this, you know, this main track where, you know, there's lanes that are helping horses, you know, stay along. And T Loves a Fight at 25-1 boosted the exotics nicely, very nicely, with the 2-1 second choice. Bankit tried to rally, but that main track, there's got to be a complete collapse, pace collapse, for anybody right about now. It seems we'll see if that changes into the weekend. You kind of, you know, you want a fair track. I mean, especially tomorrow with, you know, what we're dealing with. You know, those that are going to embrace Code of Honor. You know, he's already not necessarily going to get much of a, you know, pace. I think the pace might be square enough, but if the track is carrying horses on the front end, it's going to be tough. And of course, that'll play into the 7/8 Jerkins as well. So anxious to hear what Dave Grenig is going to have to say. In fact, Casey, you could reach for Dave right now. He's expecting us for right about now. And then in the nightcap, how about the horse that drew in? And here was the late double claimed by John Terranova and team. John and Tanya. And I saw a very happy ownership group known as Section M Stables, Adios Amigos. And you want to find trips, take a good look at the replay of this nightcap. And there were a whole bunch of, you know, a whole bunch of horses in here that had trips. And including, frankly, I don't know if it was a trip or a ride, but, and I don't want to beat up on Benji Hernandez, but Freudian analyst who I tried to weave in to this, who showed speed last time, in fact, was exiting the race that we won with Kid Chocolate. Freudian analyst, you know, getting back on, you know, getting on the grass last time, and I don't know what I'm not exactly sure what the game plan was in the late stages for Hernandez, but Freudian analyst was moving just as well as Adios Amigos, and then ended up, you know, losing a photo and finishing fourth. And he also had Brickyard as well. And Louis Cardenas. It's tough for when it comes to the bugs. Bugs, there's a saying, there's a reason you don't ride bug boys on the grass. Listen, it's a turf sprint, and it's all trips. It's all, you know, you check up. You have to, if you have to idle for a couple of strides, you're a chicken in a pot. So anyway, a really good day yesterday. And speaking of owners, by the way, I did see yesterday, and I was up very early this morning, and I went to comment because Spadale Family Racing, and really a sweet scenario there, because they got their first win at Saratoga with Foxtail, and from what I can glean, they basically started a stable in tribute to their late father. And I'm sure there's more to the story, but I congratulated Sal on Spadale Family Racing and their win. So good job there. Danny Gargan, who after a sluggish start, seems to be getting some horses to perform pretty well. Dave Grenig is standing by on Whitney weekend. Dave, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you today?
Excellent. And Dave, we've got, I think we've got some nice momentum. And, you know, after the, you know, the little initial pre-weekend start, things are starting to really flow. And this card tomorrow, just outstanding.
Yeah, look, it's Whitney Day. It's supposed to be a good card. I know there's some lamenting about the short field and the Whitney, but, you know, you have really four of the top seven older male dirt horses in the country running here. So, you know, you're not going to get a whole lot of people shipping in to run against the Tom Ziatat and Code of Honors and By My Standards of the world. So, you know, it's that proverbial small but select group. You also get Midnight Bizu in the, you know, in the personal ensign, and again, it's a monster horse. It's not going to attract a whole lot of competition. People keep beating their heads against the wall again, watching her beat you all the time. So, and I think there's a couple of good horses in that race, too. Point of Honor has really come around this year. She was good last year. She might be even better this year. And Vexatious seems to be one of those horses who runs to her competition when she's when she's facing good horses, she runs really well. And, you know, she came within the neck of Blue Prize last year in the Summer Colony up here. So, and you got a couple of really nice maiden races. It's going to be an enjoyable, albeit long, afternoon here in Saratoga.
Well, and I'm glad you touched on the competition for Midnight Bizu, 2-5, and we understand that. But I agree. The Vexatious and Point of Honor are absolutely in her area code and within striking distance. It's kind of a prequel. It's kind of an appetizer for the late action, which includes the All Stakes Pick Four that starts with the Whitney. I'm not going to mortgage anything to try to bet against her, but it's a challenge. These are particularly two solid horses, and the ones inside too. Motion, Emotion, Abounding Joy. When it comes to some pace, some pace setting, be interesting to see. People are trying to make something out of Ricardo Santana riding her for the first time, although he gets on her plenty. Not worried about that, but I think it'll be more interesting than 2-5 would indicate.
Well, the other thing too is, where is the pace coming from? I mean, is does Bossy Bride, first of all, does she stay in the race, and do they kind of, does someone look at it as they're in there to get grade one stakes placing, and they're looking at is if I can, do I go out to the lead, and if I'm some sort of long shot, do they leave me alone, and then, I can hang on for a piece. Someone's going to do that. I just haven't figured out who, and again, I'm not even 100% sure Bossy Bride stays in the race.
Well, there's some of that going on out west as well. We'll talk to Jay at the top of the hour about the the two horses. Well, we know Uncle Chuck is coming here, assuming nothing, you know, goes awry between now and tomorrow for the shared belief. But Anno Dore's decision appears to be pending yet, whether he goes to Ellis and participates there in the Ellis Park Derby. Dave, let's talk a little bit about the feature, and then we'll get to the Jerkins, the Bowling Green, and the Caress, and a little bit of, you know, news from the past week. And, you know, Code of Honor, Improbable, Tom's d'Etat. And here again, you've got a similar storyline about pace and whether there's going to be enough for Code of Honor to rally. Certainly, Shug, you know, between this and the Met, you know, these were the goals, and I think this particularly is prime for him. And his record at Saratoga is outstanding. And I think Code of Honor is actually the first horse to talk about in this group.
Well, you know, I think the pace might be dependent on how Improbable breaks. Because to me, if he breaks, he wants to be into the race. And Mr. Buff, in talking to John, you sort of get the impression that he prefers him if he actually has a little bit of a target. I don't know but he might just be so. He likes to get into that natural stride of his and be comfortable. Whether that puts him on a lead or sit in second, I guess it's, to me, the horse is a front runner, and just put him on the lead, and he might be that type of horse that likes to go fast early and, you know, can still maintain a decent pace late. But I really think that Improbable might hold the key to how fast they go in terms of, because he doesn't always break, and it seems like when he's outside of California, he has more gait issues than when he's at home. Now, conversely, there's only a 5-horse field. If they load, you know, quickly, he's not in there very long, and, you know, they open up and he goes and gets into the race. So, and I also think that, you know, Tom's d'Etat can almost do whatever Joel wants him to do, I think he'll do. And I think being parked on the outside is a great spot. Only 5 horses. It's not like he's going to get, you know, too wide into the first turn. He can be, as he showed in the Stephen Foster, he can be right on top of it too, if need be. And I think his versatility and his personality really give him, it sort of made him what, you know, he's become here. Maybe the best older horse in America. Code of Honor, we know he's going to be far back, and he's going to hope that they do sort of, somebody mixes it up early, and he's going to come with a run. And whether it's good enough or not, we really won't know until about 5:45 tomorrow. I'm interested to see, you know, this was the target race for Shug this year. He kind of threw in the Met Mile a little bit late. You know, he was sort of going to go Westchester here, but there was the gap of time was like a little, maybe too much. And he had, you know, come out of the race, the Westchester, so good that he decided to take a shot in the Met. And it wasn't a terrible race. He was wider. He was the widest on a track that was probably kinder to the inside parts. And look, I don't know if anyone was beating Vekoma the way he ran that day.
No argument. I mentioned Code of Honor's Saratoga record and breaking his maiden here as a 2-year-old, then, of course, coming back last year to win the Travers. And now here he is with another chance at a top prize as an older horse, 2-for-2 at Saratoga. And, you know, as I was handicapping, I had kind of forgotten that Tom's d'Etat is 3-for-4 up here, and not so bad on his own right.
And of course, the one time I had him was last year in the Woodward, which was really the last time he's lost. I loved him that day. Thought he was, I really thought he was going to lay over that field. And I guess as Tom or Al Stahl has called it, he called it an awkward trip that particular afternoon, and I just called it the Grenning trip, the Grenning Hex. But yeah, look, you go back and it still shows on its form, you know, that allowance race that he won by 9 here in 2017. I know that wasn't a great field, but you know, what he does is he beats the horses he's supposed to beat and beats them pretty bad. He's really a solid, solid individual. And, he's going to take a lot of beating. I know he's giving 6 pounds to everybody, but, I know he's coming off a big, big number, but he didn't look like he was, he was hard used to win that race in the Stephen Foster. So, and he looks like he's training really well here. So, I think it's going to be very difficult to beat this horse tomorrow.
Fair enough. And, you know, another little tidbit that I didn't really realize or hadn't thought of leading into the draw Wednesday was Errat Ortiz Jr. being reunited with Improbable. I'd forgotten that he rode him in the Derby.
Yeah, and I bet you most people probably forgot that he was the favorite in that Derby, too.
Well,
it'll be a good trivia question. Who was the favorite in the Derby that Maximum Security got disqualified in? Because if you're not looking at it on paper, you kind of forget that he was the favorite.
Well, I won't forget because he was my choice. So I that one I'll retain for a while yet. McKenzie too. The Alan Jerkins. Let's get into what, you know, arguably is the most interesting cast of a major stake we've had so far this year. Might end up being the most, all season. And what's always fun about the former King's Bishop, now the Alan Jerkins, is the mix of styles and the turnbacks and the stretch outs from 6 to 7. And your read on this really, really good and seemingly well-matched field.
It is a fun race. I have no idea who's going to win this race. I'm a mischievous Alex fan. In the end, I'll probably give him another shot, depending on the price. John Service mentioned that the horse, you know, about 10 or so days or a little bit longer after the Woody Stevens, he had a first breeze back, and the blacksmith noticed some bruises on the frogs, and he cut those out. They were old bruises, so must have been there, you know, going back toward the Woody Stevens. If you can excuse that, he's come back with a couple of nice breezes at Parks. He's getting reunited with Irad. I think if he can sit, and I know John continues to say he can sit, but I know his best wins this year were right there. But he kind of sat a little bit in the Gotham behind a slower pace. I just want to give this horse one more shot to think that he's, you know, way better than he showed in the Woody Stevens. Now, look, his figures haven't really lived up to par, throughout his career. But I'm willing to give him one more shot, sort of price dependent. The horse that I'm also interested in, but don't know what to do with, is 3 Technique. He was very good up here. I thought he was good last year, but his numbers haven't really matched up. He's cutting back to a one turn, which is what he wants to do. I think I would have liked to have seen maybe something before this race coming out of the Rebel. You know, he was fourth that day out of 8 to Nadal. I think I would have liked to maybe seen him have the cutback already. But, not sure if he's fast enough. But those are the two that interest me the most. No parole. You know, he's going to be out there winging it. He's spotting weight to everybody. He's going to find some other pace in here, I think. And you know, it's good. He has to prove it to me. I'm sort of reversing the roles of Woody Stevens. I need to see it again from No Parole, and I'm willing to sort of excuse mischievous Alex's race.
It's funny. I'm identical mind, really, Dave. I'm going to use mischievous Alex as our beat pick contest play, and he, in between the two scenarios, horses stretching from 3/4 to 7/8 and the turnbacks, he feels like the real specialist. And, you know, and a horse that, you know, the 7/8 is his trip. And that works here plenty of times. I think he's, you know, I think he's the horse that would seemingly be the one that is most likely, you know, to run his race, as they say. And 3 Technique of the turnbacks, I agree with that as well. I thought that he was the right turnback candidate in here. Interesting. I don't have a lot to add. We'll see who else likes what as the morning goes on. Let's talk about the Bowling Green, the Grade 2 1.375. And we've got all the usual suspects in the turf, three turn arena when it comes to Maker and Barkley Tag and Pletcher and Albertrani and Mott and Brad Cox.
Well, the easiest way to do is maybe just box the three makers. What I mean by that is the two mic makers and chest maker for Bilma. Maybe that's the way to go. Or maybe you just need to, maybe if you've had your fill of those horses, you look for someone new, like a Pillar Mountain. Maybe Pillar Mountain's a little bit on the underrated side. But to me, I guess I'm kind of interested, and maybe I'll ride Mike Maker Wave, and Cross Border and Marzo are both kind of interesting. I mean, Cross Border is four, talk about your horse for course. He's 4-for-4 at Saratoga. He went up here three times. Everyone sort of you talk about, Voodoo Song, who won four races in that one
yes.
year, and obviously the Immortal Four-Star Dave. But this horse, this horse really, relishes this Saratoga. And Makers, Mike Maker's on a bit of a roll here in month of July. Now, I know it'll be August here when we run this race, but he's had a great month both in New York and win the United Nations and even pick a race at Canterbury on the grass. So he's having a, he's sort of taking... And then this horse ran just 10 days ago, but it was an easy race in the Lubash. And what I liked about the Lubash performance is that even though it looked like he was going to be the, I even think Maker thought this, the primary speed in the short field, he wound up sitting third and still was effective. And again, he beat the horses he was supposed to beat in a manner at which he was supposed to beat them. So, kudos for him for that. Marzo, got a bit of a freshening off of kind of a bad race against tougher competition. Who's to say he couldn't bounce back in here? And I guess the other horse is a bit interesting. The other New York bred that's in here, Dot Matrix. He won a Grade Three to begin the year, and one of his races, I believe, is a total toss of that Muniz when he kind of broke horribly, but bounced back with a good second in the Tiller to an underrated horse trained by Chucky Lawrence called Perrette, an Australian bred. And then the Manhattan, I'm not sure. Maybe, I don't have an excuse for the Manhattan other than to say maybe it was just a little bit tougher than he needs to be. But actually, probably the best way to play this race is go all Sadler's Joy for third, because that's where he likes to finish.
Well, and I am a Sadler's Joy fan, but yes, you have to deal with that often. I'll look at this harder in the morning when I write things up. But I was
one note, hey, Steve. Just yeah. One note on this race. I don't know if it's he can. It's a stakes race, so he doesn't have to necessarily scratch. But Barkley entered Highland Sky back in for Sunday, I believe, in the Birdstone, 1.75 miles on the turf. So because they're both stakes races, he does not have to come out of the race tomorrow. But it is worth noting that he did enter that horse back for the 1.75 miles on the dirt. I believe he won that race last year. He won some race last year up here that came off the...
Yeah.
Let me see. No, that was the John's Call that he won that came off the grass. But he did re-enter in the longer race.
Interesting. Sunday. Interesting. All right. I'm glad you slipped that in because I hadn't had a chance to look at the Sunday card yet. Let's talk about the Caress 2, and the card closes with a turf sprint that, as we see so often... And you look at these, and you kind of have to, grab a hold and, kind of cast your lot with somebody. I'll tell you, the Now horse that seems to have some momentum is Ray Handle. I'll handle the cash.
Yeah, that race at Licensee was a funny race. It started to pour right when they were on the course there, and the race was run in a driving rainstorm. And a weird stat that I had written about going into that race was Al Stahl, believe it or not, you could probably have fun with this one in your local saloon when you're able to go back in, is ask somebody how many races Al Stahl has won at Belmont Park, and he's never won at Belmont Park. And I don't know what it is, but Delica did not have the greatest of trips that day. It was eighth at the eighth pole, almost five lengths back, and got beat a half length by I'll Handle the Cash. I see a different scenario here. I think on a firm ground with sunny skies and some pace in here, that Delica turns the tables, and so it could be a really big day for Al Stahl. Although imagine if he won this race and lost to Whitney. I don't know. Imagine that post race interview. Kariba is interesting for Christophe Clement, who's hotter than Clement. She ran nicely in an allowance race, although this is a big step up for her. And then, you know, another horse that sort of interests me is Get Mother a Rose. Mm-hmm. I just think she's better than she showed in some of these last few races here. And coming back to a sprint, she ran all right here last year. She didn't win, but I thought it was an okay performance. And I just think at a price that, you know, she could maybe wake up in the spot at a price.
In addition to all the stakes races, Personal Ensign, and then the Pick Four, we've got some nice maiden events, both for 3-year-olds and a pair of 2-year-olds. And actually, that seventh race with a number of firsters, and they're going to go a mile and a 16th on the grass, that one holds plenty of intrigue. A dynamite day of racing. Whitney
and look,
Day.
Don't miss the first one. There could be, you know, there's the first race is one of those. Everyone loves their horse type of deals. And yet it'll probably be, you know, there's only 2 horses in here that have run already, and it does seem to be a big deal. I think you have to give those horses extra looks. I know there's a lot of firsters in here, like Zenith Moon, Team Merchants, Outlier, you know, Olympiad, even Reinvest with Risk. There's a lot of guys like their horses. You know, it's the Whitney Day 2-year-old race, so you're not going to, you know, it's creature of habit, even though no one's going to be here to witness it in person. This is the 2-year-old race that a lot of people look forward to. So, but Win From Within has already run well first time out at Belmont. So you think that with the pressure angle that one has the edge, but there's a lot of firsters in here to watch, including the one from the rail, Zenith Moon, who's been really breezing great downstate.
Dave Grenig with us from the Racing Forum, and just a couple of minutes before Marcus Hirsch joins us to talk about the upsetting news from Chicago yesterday. And Dave, you referenced Christophe Clément, who, along with Joel Rosario, just are on a eye-popping roll. Some thoughts about, as we get through our second full week over the next 72 hours, some overview?
Well, Clément's sort of been stealing the show here with 11 wins. It's probably already his second or third best Saratoga meet ever, and we're only, like you mentioned, 10 or 11 days into this thing. And, you know, the little team that combo of him and Rosario, I think they've won 8 races together. The thing with Clément is he's not afraid to go buy those, you know, get those New York breds and the expensive kinds. They're not necessarily the ones that are going to run in the Stallion Stakes, but they're very solid New York bred turf and dirt horses. And the thing with Clément is he does well at Belmont toward the end of the meet, typically, because a lot of guys are saving their horses for Saratoga. Here, you know, since the Saratoga Belmont meet was such a shorter version, you know, I think he just had more horses ready to go at the right time, and you know, they're all running, you know, lights out. And like I mentioned, he's got that Kariba in the Caress tomorrow. Chad Brown's on a little bit of a cold streak. I have him at 0-21 here since he won the last race on the 23rd, but that won't last very long, or too much longer, I should say. So the jockey race is kind of interesting, whether the Ortiz brothers and Rosario sort of 2 or 3 wins apart. The racing's been solid. The fields may not be as big as people are expecting. On a day-to-day basis, but that, you know, there's a lot of people that aren't here or are here with lesser numbers. So, but the betting is good, the racing's been solid, and everyone, I haven't found, and you rarely find this in horse racing, I haven't found anyone yet complaining about the main track, and that might be, when it's all said and done, Steve, the biggest story of the meet. You know, I don't want to jinx it, but, you know, it seems like it's been a very safe meet so far, and I think credit to Naira and Glenn Kozak and his staff for the undertaking the redoing of the main track.
Yep.
Because when you talk to people about it, no one has a bad word to say. And,
no.
And how rare is this race?
No doubt, and in fact, it's even in the other direction. It's uniform praise. I asked Steve Asmussen about it after Volatile on Monday. George Weaver was with us on TV the first week with Seth and I. George loves it. Chad has giving it thumbs up and rave reviews. It's going to get tested. I'll warn people now. We've got weather coming apparently for next week, and the drainage part of this equation, it'll get its moisture content test next week.
No question, but it's but we've had some days like what was earlier in the week. I didn't even come out.
Yes.
One morning I was about to come out. It was Tuesday maybe, and it just poured. And by Wednesday, the track was everyone was sort of raving about how well the track was. So
yeah.
Hopefully that stays. Hopefully, like you said, there is potential weather next week, which is what bad timing with the Travers coming up. Hopefully, it's middle part of the week and everyone can get their works in this weekend, which they should be able to, and then by we get to race day it'll be all right. It'll be tested, but I think so far so good.
Well, and also speaking of the Travers, any updates to field morphing? And I see that the Noda brothers are now considering a quick turnaround.
Yeah, I'd be stunned if that horse isn't in the field, to be honest with you, at this point. He ran well the other day. It's a little quick back, but hey, why not? My quick rundown would be just alphabetically: Caro, Country Grammar. Let's throw First Line in there. Max Player. I'm going to throw Mystic Guide in there. I know he's going to have a workout with the blinkers on at Bear Hill and then make a decision. But let's say he's let's just put him in there. Chivalry. Question mark on South Bend. Tis the Law, and I know Uncle Chuck is entered tomorrow, but as you referenced earlier in the show, that he's supposed to come out and come here. So hopefully that does come to fruition, and that's what it looks like right now. So what is that? 1, 2, and I have a question mark on South Bend if I didn't mention that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I have 6 definites and 3 question marks. So Nick Zito's never bashful about the Travers, so I could see, he didn't run really, really well in the Bluegrass. Hunt the front to come in. So it could swell. I'll say anywhere between 7 and 9.
Very nice. Well, and regarding South Bend, it was last week when we talked to Stanley Huff, and I asked him about the horses that had passed through the that were involved in the Horses of Racing Age sale. And for those that are keeping tabs, South Bend is now with Bill Mott, and Stanley had mentioned that was going to come to pass, because I asked him if the horse was staying with him. So when you're looking to head to South Bend, it'll come out of the Mott barn, who and Bill Mott really with top to bottom with a nice variety of major horses, as strong as he's been in years. Dave,
yes.
I appreciate it. I know you've got Turf Works getting started.
They're coming to the 5-furlong pole now. Your timing is impeccable.
No, it's your timing. It's Dave Grenick, everybody. DRF Grenick, the big Whitney weekend forecast. We're going to stay right here because Marcus Hirsch, Dave's colleague, joining us. And yesterday, Marcus, having tuned in to the Churchill shareholder news conference, brought forth a piece of news that it was not unexpected, but at the same time, pretty much dreaded the potential end of Arlington Park as we know it. Marcus, good morning.
Hello, Steve.
We, you and I, 3 weeks ago, whenever the meet was confirmed, this was sort of a backdrop. Talk about what you heard, what Bill Carstensen had to say, and the reaction that as you assembled the story.
Well, I didn't hear anything, and I wasn't on the call in the morning, but somebody tipped me off and said Arlington came up and they basically said they're closing it. So I was a little surprised that I looked around to see if anybody had written this, because I was busy with work until mid-afternoon, and somehow it just slipped through the cracks. Because I think people reported on the second quarter results that were released by CDI on Wednesday, and then I guess not everyone was sitting around waiting for to get through that hour conference call on Thursday morning. But anyway, I mean, to parse the remarks a little bit, I mean, you know, sometimes I think that it's clear, you know, corporations have agendas and say things to try to put themselves in a position to accomplish their goals. So, I mean, maybe these seemingly fairly concrete statements are toward a different end that I don't have knowledge of and that I, you know, wouldn't understand, and they're negotiating points. So, I mean, I think we should always be careful about taking these sorts of things at complete face value when we don't know kind of the machinations that produce them. But, I mean, just from what was said on this call, I mean, there were pretty definitive words said about the, like, you know, this Arlington does not have a, I mean, the long-term solution is not Arlington Park. The land will have a higher and better purpose or something else at some point. We've been patient and thoughtful and constructive with the parties up in that jurisdiction, but long-term, that land gets sold, and that license will need to move if it's going to continue. So those are some direct quotes from this call. And Mr. Karstangen, the CEO of CDI, did not want to, he wouldn't address a specific time frame for these things occurring. He said early in his answer to this question that was asked, this came up during the Q&A session, we've reached a two-year agreement with Horsemen. We'll run a 2020 race meet. We have an agreement to run a 2021 race meet if we elect to do so. So, coincidentally, dates, applications for 2021 are due today with the Illinois Racing Board. So we'll see what happens. There's the dates awards meeting is September 1st or 2nd week in September, where the Racing Board has had a chance to review all the applications and goes through the process of awarding not just race days, but simulcast dark host time, which accumulates purse money when there isn't live racing for the actual race meet and to the benefit of the racetrack operators. We'll see what happens with that, but I mean, things are already sliding in the direction of, you know, Arlington maybe not having the same sort of season or awards in the past, and this news definitely pushes that along at a higher rate than would have been anticipated.
I know that the piece that you put together late yesterday didn't include reaction from, you know, the Illinois Horsemen or, you know, sure, other quotes. Have you talked to anybody subsequently? And what can we hear from that end?
Well, the IGHA did put out a release. I mean, it was not very specific. It just said, you know, I mean, it basically talked about how Illinois gaming expansion law was intended to boost overnight purses, so on and so forth. And that, you know, basically saying that CDI had vacated the responsibility within the framework of racing law and what their responsibility was supposed to be as, you know, a state-controlled entity. In the end, racing is regulated by the state of Illinois. As I mentioned, you know, the dates are awarded by this bureaucratic institution. And, I think that the ICJ's position is that here is an entity that controls the most important racing element in the entire state and kind of abdicated in their position as the primary stakeholder in this entire structure. I mean, this you can trace this back to any number of things. Like when CDI first merged with Arlington back in 2000, that was a big watershed moment, obviously. And then in 2015, when CDI bought like 1 million shares of stock from Dutchess Wa Holdings, that really changed the dynamic. It pushed, you know, Mr. Dutchess, while the chairman, longtime chairman, now the chairman emeritus of Arlington, you know, toward the background. And it's when the corporate structure of CDI came to the fore and made moves that, you know, in the end, you know, didn't benefit Arlington. I think that's what the horsemen and people who, you know, rely on racing to make a living and want to see it continue in this state are kind of upset with. The focus turned to acquiring, you know, a stake in the Rivers Casino, which is 13 miles away from Arlington, and now CDI has a majority ownership share in that. And that place, you know, that's as much as anything why, presumably, why, you know, they didn't apply for slots. I was getting to that as another, you know, milestone along this route last summer when, after the gambling expansion legislation passed in June, everyone anticipated, since CDI for years had lobbied strongly to be permitted to open casinos at racetracks, when they declined to apply for a casino license, I think a lot of people thought that was kind of the writing on the wall for the future of Arlington.
Right.
Last summer. And those people, if we were to take what we heard yesterday at face value, as I mentioned, the all caveats apply at the start of our conversation, those people who said that was the beginning of the end, or the real beginning of the end game after movement, as I mentioned, in that direction for years and years, I guess those people seem like they were kind of right at this point.
Simultaneously with this came the formal license granting of sports betting for Hawthorne, and I think that as I indicated, and you know, we all have kind of anticipated that this, you know, eventuality was in the cards. I think people are going to have to adjust their, you know, their thinking toward the future in Illinois, and center it around Hawthorne, and appreciate that you know, what has gone into you know, maintaining it, and you get that sense that
the sports book is not going to help racing at all.
And no, but
just to follow up on that, Arlington, CDI said they're not even going to open a sports book at Arlington as they initially had said they were going to. That makes money for the racetrack, which I guess helps operations and expenses and the bottom line generally, but the sports betting gives nothing to purses, at least the way Illinois law is written. And so yesterday as well, the Illinois Gaming Board gave like initial approval to the license applicants from Hawthorne, meaning like the background checks and all the stuff that goes into examining the suitability of the people who are direct applicants or associated like immediately with the applicants. That they cleared that hurdle. They have not been formally licensed yet, and this process of getting a casino license is taking forever. The application was filed in August, and initially was expected that these licensing decisions would be rendered by the end of 2019. There was a backlog originally just because of the way things shook out. I mean, the gambling expansion was so massive, the number of new casinos, and then there's been a big problem with the Chicago casino, which was supposed to be the landmark of this legislation.
Right.
And then coronavirus. So now here we are, and we'll see, you know, how quickly that moves along to the next phase of this process. Now, Hawthorne they said in the release they put out yesterday, they still hope to have a casino open by the end of 2021. That's optimistic. And also, we don't know, I mean, hopefully by the end of 2021, people will be able to gather in large groups in enclosed spaces, but, you know, that remains to be seen. And, I mean, I'm sorry, but I like Hawthorne. I like a lot of people that work there. I don't mind the facility. I like going there, but it's not Arlington. It's not for everyone. It's in a completely different kind of area. It's very urban and industrial, which is not the end of the world, but I mean, Arlington is like, it's out in, it seems like the countryside. You know, you got a row of willow trees on the far side of the course. And just, you know, it's right on a Metro train stop in a suburb. It's not like on Cicero Avenue, you know, right next to Chicago proper. It's just it's a different dynamic. And, you know, I without trying to be offensive toward anyone, I just don't think that it's going to have nearly the same sort of draw, even if they get summer dates and try to create a, you know, major state right. schedule. I don't know what their plans are. I don't know how much money they'll have to do that. I mean, at some point, you know, this that there are only so many gambling dollars available, and they basically get reshuffled more than increased, and how much money will actually flow into racing from a Hawthorne casino opening? I mean, nobody knows the real answer to that question. And it remains to be seen how viable Hawthorne would be as a flagship racetrack for the Chicago racing circuit. I can just say it's not going to be Arlington. If and when Arlington does close, you know, it's not going to be, it's just not going to be replaceable.
Agreed. Agreed. And, you know, going back, of course, you know, Washington Park, which was one of, you know, one of the, not just the Midwest's great racetracks. It was an important national racetrack. This is unsettling and depressing, to be honest. I don't know how else to,
It's definitely. I'm a little unclear about what this talk of moving the license means.
Well, I was going to ask, but I think it's so. It seems so. You know, it seems mysterious, and we'll let those, you know, those indicators play out. I didn't know what to make of that either.
Well, CDI does own Quad City Downs in East Moline on the other side of the state, which is. Was a harness track, the first racetrack I went to, in fact, in my life.
Wow!
And they've been closed for years, but they, you know, they that could be, you know, some that could be what's being referred to as somehow like moving the license there. It's hard to imagine, wouldn't you say, that that company would be interested in. Building a new racing facility to transfer a license. I mean, I guess you could imagine, like, maybe they wanted to make, I just don't know. I mean, if they had a property that was, you know, distant to their casino, and they've also got an application in to be the company that runs the casino that was granted for Waukegan, which is north of Chicago along the lake, I just can't really see that they would be making a new racetrack. So I don't know what that means. I do know that the Illinois Racing Board has, in the past, not taken kindly to the notion that you could just move a license to a different venue. But, you know, the board changes all the time. There's still vacancies. Members are being appointed. There's a new chairman. We'll see how that all shakes out.
Marcus, I appreciate this. I didn't want to go the weekend without addressing it. You can tell by the reaction online, people just pretty heartsick over the concept of losing a place like Arlington, where so many will have had their first experience. And
it's almost like there's a big segment of the racing population that thinks this is a really terrible thing. In fact, I'm surprised and. We can't let the social media bubble, you know, fool us into thinking that we're getting a true picture of even the racing population at large. But I was a little surprised at the amount of response and feedback. It seems like this is pretty troubling news to a lot of people who have even a passing interest in racing.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody, DRF Hirsch, and Jay Privman's going to join us here momentarily, and as we wait quickly for Jay, Marcus, some interesting game plan. What did you address this weekend? Give us a play or two.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm really interested in the Saratoga races, but maybe not quite so much from a betting perspective, because I didn't like any real prices. But
sure.
I just think the Whitney is a fascinating and fabulous race. I saw, you know, Al Stalsh, and I'm not, this is going to sound like horse name dropping, and I don't mean it to be that way, because I like horses a lot, and I like seeing young horses and promising horses, but when Al Stalsh, you know, I picked this horse out, you know, as a yearling, Tom Zaytine, he showed him to me before he'd ever run, and he was,
wow.
You know how these guys show off their horses they like proud parents, like, look at this guy, you know, and you could see why he said that. I mean, this horse was a big boy as a juvenile, or maybe that was early in the 3-year-old season. Time passes so strangely these days, but I just always thought he was cut out to be a really nice horse, and, watched him train a little early on, and the trajectory of his career, and then, you know, 2017, his race, his allowance prep for the Woodward, where he got a 106 buyer, that was a tremendous performance. I really thought he was going to win the Woodward that year.
You and Dave Grenick, Dave just said that 20 minutes ago. It's, yeah.
That's funny.
Exactly. Now, Marcus, I appreciate it, and the game plan, of course, brings together all the handicapping minds at DRF, and Saturday's a great day to utilize it, and we'll talk later with Mike Welsh as well. Clocker Report. Marcus, thank you. We'll stay on top of the Arlington story. Marcus Hirsch, everybody, and we'll stay right here. Jay Privman standing by, and it's all DRF all the time on Weekend Preview. Jay, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. We had to get that Arlington story up. It just was just so disheartening to see that yesterday.
Yep. It really is.
One great racetrack after another under the direction. The monolith of shareholder obligation, I guess.
Yep.
Turn our attention, though, Jay, to a very good weekend of racing on both coasts, and particularly all eyes on the Shared Belief tomorrow, early in the afternoon at Del Mar, and obviously Honor AP, and Baffert taking some swings. We've got more to talk about too, but let's engage there.
So the Shared Belief tomorrow will be the second race on the card. There were six entered, but there's going to be fewer than that in the race. Uncle Chuck, as we've been riding for weeks now, is going to the Travers Stakes. And the connections of the No Door, strongly considering going to Ellis Park for the Ellis Park Derby. It seemed like they were leaning for sure to go that way last weekend, and then midweek they were still debating it. So they still hadn't, as of Wednesday night, come up with a decision when I was in touch with Blaine Wright. So I would imagine they're just waiting to see if something, unforeseen happens with Honor AP. That might change their mind. But other than that, I think they were intending to go to Ellis. So you've got Honor AP against what would be two Bafferts, Thousand Words and Cezanne, and then an overmatched long shot in Kiss Today Goodbye.
Jay, a lot's been made of with Honor AP cutting back from the mile and the eighth and the Santa Anita Derby. Not that the mile and the 16th isn't some issue there, but as a prep and as a path to the Derby. Any thoughts about cutting back in this spot?
I think ideally they'd rather have run a mile and an eighth, but the Shared Belief used to be a mile race, and it was moved to earlier in the meet and lengthened to a mile and a 16th to make it a West Coast prep with points towards the postponed Kentucky Derby on September the 5th. But it's still, long enough that he's going to be fine. And I think from a competition standpoint, he should be fine as well. So, the only The only question would be if for some reason he just doesn't take the track. He did run well here in his debut sprinting last summer in mid-August. So, and he's trained well here. You know, the track's just been, it was very different the first weekend of the meet from the what was the second racing weekend, but third calendar weekend of the meet last weekend when it was very deep and tiring. So we'll see how it is for this weekend, I guess starting this afternoon when we resume racing.
Well, and I saw your in your advance. In fact, you discussed that and the difference between the surface early in the summer pre-meet and you know the horseman indicating, you know, my horse really liked the surface that we had 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, that was pretty much Sheriff's work. I said, you know, how's he like the track here? He said, which one? So the one we got here or the one last weekend, you know, when he ran mid-court against Maximum Security.
Yeah.
Very different racetracks. So we'll see what we get this afternoon and for the weekend. But, you know, obviously Honor AP is, you know, is a horse we've been really high on for a long time, and he's done nothing to, you know, dissuade me from that opinion. And I thought his Santa Anita Derby was terrific. You know, Authentic came back and ran well out of the race. But even Rushy ran a good race in the Bluegrass out of that race. And this will be, you know, his final prep to move on to the Kentucky Derby. I know there's been some chatter about, well, it's a mile and a 16th. Maybe Mike Smith will ride him out after the race. Sheriff's assured me that's not happening. He says they're not getting cute. Just want to get a good race into him. Obviously, you know, the intention is to win. But to get a good race, hope it's not a hard race on him, recover, and then get ready for 5 weeks from now.
In addition to the shared belief, feature the grade one, the Bing Crosby later, Jay. And
you don't want to talk about the other horses in the shared belief?
We can, yeah, absolutely.
No, I don't know, there's thousand yeah, words in there in Cezanne. I just didn't know if you wanted any.
Sure. No, flesh it out more. Absolutely.
My thoughts absolutely. And prayers to them. they're going up against the 900-pound gorilla here. A thousand words is a horse who at the beginning of the year looks like he might be a significant Derby player. He just hasn't really progressed from two to three. He ran a decent race last time behind Uncle Chuck. The one thing I'll say about him regarding the race tomorrow is he's really trained well down here. His couple of works here, in particular his most recent one last weekend, have been very good. So, you know, maybe he's starting to turn the corner here. In fact, I thought his work last weekend, his final work for this race, he worked with Cezanne, and I thought he was superior to Cezanne in the work. You know, Cezanne's allowance win was fine, but it wasn't anything Uncle Chuck-like. The thing that Cezanne will maybe have in his favor tomorrow is that there's not a whole lot of pace in the race, and you would think he would make the lead. So that's you know, that's kind of my thoughts on that race.
Well, and I, as I've indicated too, I'm a thousand words fan, and would like to see him kind of re-engage and you know, move past his, you know, his 2-year-old top, as it were, you know, and fulfill a little bit more of that, you know, that promise that was shown earlier in the career. Let's talk about the Crosby as well and the McKenzie scenario in here, Jay. Some people reading tea leaves and smoke signals as you know, kind of a not a desperation move, but you know, kind of a, you know, let's try something new. What's your thoughts on how this evolved with McKenzie?
He's not running.
Okay, that
he's scratching out of the race.
Very good. Okay.
Yeah.
And the decision.
Just didn't like where he was drawn. Race came up tougher than thought. You know, second thoughts about cutting all the way back to 6 furlongs. Looks like he'll keep him at 7 for the Pat O'Brien, which is later in the meet, going 7 ace, which is the shortest distance he's ever run. He's 3 for 3 going 7 ace. His debut, the Triple Bend, and the Grade 1 Malibu. So I just don't think, quite sure where they're at with the horse right now.
Yeah.
He won the Triple Bend. It was a good race, but, not as good as it can be. His Met Mile was okay, but he's better than that. He did lose 2 shoes in the race, but he needs to be better than he was in that race, obviously. And he was awful and overseas earlier this year. So, really 2 of his last 3 races have been well below what his best is. So I think that, but he worked so well last week.
Right.
And on the day of entry, we entered on Sunday for Saturday. And he worked last Sunday morning, and it was like, if I want to run him, I got to put him in the race. I got to enter today. It wasn't like he could wait till Wednesday when in the past when entry day for Saturday was Wednesday. Because of the abbreviated schedule this year of 3 days of racing, they take entries for Saturday much earlier. And so I think Baffert just wanted to give himself a few more days to contemplate the possibility. And in order to do that, you needed to enter then and then think it over. And upon further review, decided yesterday that he was coming out.
Very good. Well, that it's still the Crosby and still a Grade 1. Lexingtonian had this opportunity kind of forced on him because of the gate incident at Saratoga last Saturday when it came to the Vanderbilt. So Lexingtonian heads out there, and it looks like there's some horses hoping to break through here.
Well, you've got some accomplished horses in here. Fashionably Fast just finished 2nd to McKinsey in the Triple Bend, and Dark Vader came out of that race and won last weekend for Urton. So, that race, the form of that race has held up decently, and, Fashionably Fast is a really top horse. Obviously, he's made most of his money in state-restricted races, but I thought he acquitted himself well in open company last week. He's done very well at Del Mar over the years. He's 3 for 5 here, and I probably inherit the role of favorite right now. And then, a couple other interesting horses in here are Collusion Illusion, who's a 3-year-old who's going to take on his elders in a stake race. But he's 4 for 4 sprinting, and he's 2 for 2 at Del Mar, including winning the Best Pal here last summer. And he's trained very well here for this race coming out of the Barrera. And then kind of a wild card horse is Wild Man Jack, who has never raced on dirt before. But he's got a dirt pedigree. He's by Golden Sense. He's out of an Orientate mare. He's just been such a good turf sprinter. They've left well enough alone. But he busted out of the gate the other day and worked very well. And they, again, decided to, it's like, why not? It's a big purse, Grade 1. He breezed real well on the dirt here. He's trained regularly on the dirt. It's not like he's worked on the grass his whole life. So he's an intriguing horse. It's not, it's not like he's a grass pedigree horse. He just was put on the grass because that's what he was bred to do. I think he's live on dirt here tomorrow.
Well, and we think back to when we first started talking to him about him with Doug O'Neill, and Doug really, he projected what a nice horse this was going to be, and what a serious, serious sprinter he was going to be, and he seemed on track in Dubai, for the Alquaz, and of course everything went by the board. So, Wild Man Jack in here. I've been a fan of Collusion Illusion for Mark Glatt as well. What about Second Off the Layoff too, Jay, for Carly Gaines and Harris? Desert Law, who was a nice second in here to Sistron last year.
Yeah, certainly. He ran well in this race last year. And like you say, coming off of an extended layoff and ran a decent comeback race against State Breds in the Thor's Echo last time, and you know, last year he won the Thor's Echo, which set him up for the for his good run in the Crosby. I just think this year's Crosby Field, even with McKenzie out, I think this year's Crosby Field is better than last year's. And you know, but if he moves forward off of that race, he's
right.
Obviously got a big chance in here.
No, and very nice. And should also mention, I mentioned at the top of the show, for those that haven't had a chance to look ahead to Sunday, the Clement Hirsch, and it sort of has a, you know, it sort of has a same theme, Jay, as what we're dealing with the Whitney, you know, which is some really elite horses, not a big quantity, but high quality, and very interesting, you know, led by CC and Hard Not to Love, Dog Tag, Ollie's Candy, Fighting Mad, and Hang a Star.
Yeah, so that's the field, those six. It's a really good race. You know, a lot of cream at the top there with CC, who's really kind of the most interesting story in the race, because you know, CC's a homebred of Bo Hirsch, and Bo's father is Clement Hirsch, for whom the race is named. So that would be, I'm sure, an incredibly meaningful victory for Bo if he could win this race named for his father. You know, CC, though, coming off a third-place finish as the odds-on favorite last time, behind Fighting Mad and Hard Not to Love. So, you know, they're all back again here at Del Mar. You know, Hard Not to Love is obviously extremely talented, and she's got her her issues just getting to the gate, but once they can get her there, she usually performs well. You know, but Fighting Mad, who is not really one of the big headliners in here by comparison, you know, she beat those two last time, but I think even more importantly, she loves Del Mar. I think here, she's as much in play to win this race as any of them. And then you've got Ollie's Candy, who's, you know, an extremely unlucky loser to CC in the Apple Blossom, and then just got tagged late in the Ogden Phipps last time in her two last races on the road. And, oh, yeah, by the way, she's just the defending champ in this race, you know, having won it last year. So it's a really good race.
There's one interesting sidebar to this, too, and not unexpected necessarily at this level. You've got four homebreds that are competing for their breeder owner, and then the two that aren't homebreds come from really powerhouse operations, including in Ontario, David Anderson, Anderson Farms, the breeder that brought you Wonder Godot, and Hertrick and Fielding, the bred Hang a Star. I mean, that it's a glittering array, actually, on the breeding front.
Yeah, no, it's really just a, like you said, it's a small field, but the quality is certainly there.
Small but elite. We've got a two-year-old, got a nice two-year-old filly group going five furlongs as well on the main on Sunday. A terrific weekend overall. And, Jay, we've sort of referenced it, and one of the storylines, you know, certainly with Uncle Chuck coming to the Travers for Baffert, and we mentioned McKenzie. Looking at this field, we talked to Dave earlier. Marcus had a little bit of an opinion. The Whitney, certainly interesting, improbable, comes to New York and faces off against Tom's the Tot. And you know, this is, again, that elite group, fold-in code of honor. Got a thought for the Whitney?
No, Steve, I've looked at Del Mar's races. I mean, obviously, those horses are all, their form is known. Improbable has trained great out here. I'm just not sure if he's as good as the horses he's going to take on back there, but he's trained fantastically. You know, I've always been a big fan of By My Standards. He's a really cool horse, but, I mean, how can you not like the job that Al Stahl's done with Tom's the Tot and just and root for what that means in terms of horsemanship, in terms of taking your time with a horse who had the issues that he did as a young horse. So I'm looking forward to watching that race. But if you want to talk about the races at Del Mar, and in particular all the two-year-old racing that's going on here this weekend, I'm happy to do that.
Do you have some horses off the clip and save?
Quite a few, yeah. you know, you had mentioned that Sunday race, the race seven, Moonlight Doro, who's one of the ones from Mandela's got quite a few, a couple that are running this weekend that are of note. She's one of them. She's running on Sunday in race seven. She's very quick, and I've been impressed with her breezes before. You don't forget that story was written, it's hard to believe it's nearly a month now since, you know, the meet started on July 10, and that story was turned in early July. So, you know, a lot of some of these horses made a lot of progress, both good and bad since then, but she's continued to train well, and I think you'll see a good performance from her on Sunday in that race.
Yeah, that group, just looking up and down. Got a Nyquist on the inside for Baltus, and the Y Gods have a homebred, an Into Mischief. Mullins with an Uncle Mo. Nice Spitestown for Dan Blacker. It's a nice nice group. Jerry Hollendorfer, Frosted Blue, first Frosted, and Jim Chapman too with a Run Happy out there. How about that third race, Jay? Anything in here that among the boys?
You mean the graduation stakes on Sunday or the third race on Saturday?
You got both, actually. Race. You got the state bred group, the graduation, which goes as the third, and then the third race as well on Saturday with the 2 year old boy version.
Yeah, the third race on Saturday, Steve, is loaded. I mean, that race is, you know, everybody's been kind of late with their 2 year olds getting going this year,
right,
owing to the, you know, with the suspension of racing everywhere, that sets everybody back, and then the 2 year old sales were set back. So I think it's taken a little bit longer to get going, but it gets going here, I think, Saturday. That race came up extremely strong. There's four horses in that race who, you know, I had on my list, you know, back nearly 4 weeks ago now, headed by Freedom Fire for Baffert. I had also mentioned, though, that I thought Ryan Hansen was, an under-the-radar guy to watch out for this meet, and Epidemic was one of his horses that I had mentioned. He debuts in that race as well. You know, you've got Wi-Fire for Mendez, who sends out, you know, two-year-olds that are always ready to go. And then Anti-Gravity, speaking of Hollendorfer, you know, you've got Anti-Gravity as well here. So this is, and there's a couple others drawn outside who might, you know, be live in here as well. But this is a really, so far for this meet, this is the 2 year old race I'm most looking forward to in terms of depth and a promise of the ones that are in here. It's a very good race.
Nice. And you know, the field size too is notable, because, you know, we're limiting to eight, and so you get 10, it you know, kind of gives them a, you know, an authentic experience too when they bust out. This is my first look at this group, actually, and pretty tawny, as they say, looking up and down at the sire power involved. Very nice. That's the third. Well, this is the time, right, Jay? I mean, everybody wants their 2 year old to debut and win at Saratoga and at Del Mar.
Yes, usually it was because they could go and see them and be there, but at least at Del Mar starting today, you know, two owners per horse are allowed to come in, so there's at least,
oh, good,
things are progressing a little bit there. And there's actually a two-year-old race on the grass today. There's a couple of two-year-old races today, but one in particular, race eight on the grass, it's a very promising. See, I was talking about how Mandela's got Moonlight Doro on Sunday. He's got a filly named Ivy League, homebred for LNJ Foxwoods, out of a mare who was very precocious 2 year old grass filly, and this horse's name is Ivy League, and she's trained like she's got some quality too. So it's a good weekend from a 2 year old standpoint out here.
Very nice. And you, today also the real good deal stake, too, 7/8 for the Calbred boys, three-year-olds.
Yep.
The feature this afternoon goes off at 9:07 Eastern, 6:07 Pacific. And El Tigre Terrible.
Yeah, Terrible would describe his last couple trips.
But I'm bumped. Jay, one of the big weekends, obviously, on both coasts as we get Whitney Day here and looking forward to Travers next week. Dave gave us the latest update on the field as it is assembling. We're getting down to some you know, short strokes. The Ellis Park Derby next Sunday as well, and then April will be over, and we'll be looking to September.
Yes, the traditional Derby preps, the shared belief, Travers and Ellis Park Derby.
And don't forget that Pegasus back at Monmouth, the Lexington of summer. Going to have some fun. Jay, thanks a lot. This was great, and we'll talk pre-Travers.
Very good. Talk to you next week, Steve.
Jay Pribman, and, of course, Thoroughbred L.A. tomorrow with Jay, and another. This is a nice three nice cards came together, and I got to make a decision. I'm probably going to use that Clement Hirsch on Sunday for the beat pick contest because we have the Birdstone, but on Sunday. But I think that Clement Hirsch it's such a quality matchup with that six pack. That'll be fun. And in fact, while we're doing that, we're heading to the break. Ron Gierkink's going to join us next from Woodbine. And as we do that, let me give you, because I think the numbers were even bigger than I first reported when I mentioned them early in the week. Last Saturday, 883 played, and you had 237 winners. And then on Sunday, 781 with 300 winners. A lot of chalk eaters out there. Come on. Yeah, you want to come up with prices, don't you? I'm finishing third over and over again here with my plays. It's been a run, actually. Of third place finishes. Warren Showtime. It ran okay, but just, you know, got overwhelmed late by Lawrence Light. And then who was it in the read? Oh, United. That's it was Sunday. United, everybody chalked out. All right, we'll see what you do. We'll see what you do tomorrow with the Alan Jerkins. Cause you got plenty to choose from. The selection I told you earlier, mischievous Alex, the selection. And I'm sure that the Holly Short and Michelle Raven-Graff will send out the message. I would think soon, actually. Let's take a break. Bottom of the hour, 90 minutes flown by. We've got Ron Gierkink, we got Hammer, we got Nick Tamaro, and Mike Welch yet. Weekend preview at the races back after this, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Ah, Saratoga. It's history. It's tradition. It's world-class racing. It's jump racing. Yes, steeplechase racing has played a role in Saratoga's rich history and tradition since 1864. And today, it's a part of what makes Saratoga so special. Watch every Wednesday of the meet and two special Thursdays featuring the Grade 1 AP Smithick on July 23rd and the Grade 1 New York Turf Riders Cup on August 20th. Savor the thrill of horses flying over fences. Steeplechase racing, it's a Saratoga tradition.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow. What other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Sirius XM Sports.